Good evening, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to another lovely evening of Jaybird watching. It is almost spring training. The cold, abysmal evenings, the terribleness, groundhogs, all that kind of stuff are almost behind us, and we can start looking forward to green grass, white baseballs being crushed over fences, and bat flips, most importantly. So, per usual, the gang is with me. It is my week to host, but Adam Corsair and Brendan Panikkar are with us. Fellas, how are you doing?
What's going on?
Surviving, man. There's too much snow out there.
Like I said, green grass. It's coming.
I don't see none around me, man. It's all white snow.
Or at least you'll see it on your Sportsnet feed soon enough.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
There you go. So, from all the fans that are already hopefully watching, we have another fourth window with us on the show here this evening, and we have our old friend, Jason Lee. How are you doing, buddy? It's great to have you on the show for the first time, long time.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Craig. I mean, it's been too long. I tried to make things work, but obviously, you know, we're all super busy. But it's reading week for me, so you caught me at a good time, and I'm just excited to talk Blue Jays baseball with three wonderful gentlemen.
Awesome, buddy. It's great. Glad to have you here. And I guess we'll just kick it off. And Jason, this is what we always start off with our show. First off, I forgot. Thanks for everybody at Stadium Scene for giving us all the shout outs and everything that we've been continuing to get. And we are glad to be part of the Stadium Scene TV network. Also, hit us up on our Patreon account if you want to join the experience here. That is Jaybird watching. And yeah, we can get you in higher on a show if you subscribe to our Patreon account, and we'll get you all set with that. But anyway, back to business here, fellas. Spring training is afoot, and unfortunately, the Blue Jays just lost out on one of their possible targets in James Paxton. Jason, is this a huge miss for the Blue Jays, or is this something that we're okay living without at the moment?
I wouldn't call it a huge miss. I definitely wanted the Jays to be on him. You know, I heard an interview by Matt Boyd, who was training with James Paxton, saying, you know, Paxton was looking back to his old stuff. He was hitting 95, 97, I think, on the radar gun. And the spin rates, you know, were also at when James Paxton was at his peak. You know, I'm disappointed just because I don't think that the rotation that the Blue Jays have right now is good enough for a serious playoff run. You know, because if you look at it, Ryu, he's still the ace. There's no question about his talent, but he's had some injury problems in the past. And then from there, you know, who's your number two? Is it Nate Pearson? You know, the guy obviously is still really, really good. You know, he has Cy Young potential, but at the same time, you know, asking, you know, a guy, you know, who's had, you know, less than 100 innings, I think, in the big leagues to be your number two starter is just way too much to ask. And, you know, I would like to see Nate Pearson, you know, get a lot more protection, whether that's in the form of Jake Odorizzi, whether that's in the form of Taijuan Walker or some other trade. And, you know, even the back end starters, there's so many question marks. Tanner Roark, I hoped would never see pitch in a Blue Jays uniform, but he's maybe still the number five starter. Steven Matz, you know, it's 50-50 whether he's going to bounce back to his old number three, number four starter form or continue, you know, to struggle. So, you know, there's a lot of question marks. I'm not happy with the rotation as it is right now. So, yeah, I definitely say that losing James Paxton was a miss, but because there are other options out there right now, I wouldn't necessarily label it as a huge miss.
Gotcha. Mr. Corsair, would you like to pick up the ball and run with that one?
Yeah, I wasn't really of the three available starting pitching free agents that we were, you know, gunning for, that being Odorizzi, Walker, and Paxton. Paxton, for me, was the least desirable of the three. The injury history was a bit concerning to me. Not that I would have complained if the Blue Jays signed him, but I'm not necessarily surprised that they didn't. From what I'm gathering, just in terms of, you know, reading the tea leaves, nothing insider or nothing really substantial, it seems like they're getting strapped for cash, because you figure if they had available funds or revenue to liquidate, they probably sign one of the three by now. It's specifically Walker, just because of the familiarity with it. But they're not. And that leads me to believe that they're either being patient with what they want to do and they're trying to wait out the process, or they might want to see what they have and evaluate during spring training to see if anything, you know, lightning in a bottle. Or they're just negotiating still. Of those three scenarios, I think the last one is probably the least likely. But I don't know. It's a little discouraging, but not really personally, because I wasn't really gunning for him. So I by no means does the signing of Paxton to Seattle make me think that the Blue Jays are in, you know, a terrible position. They still have options. It's just whether or not they're going to take advantage of those options. And as each day passes, you kind of got to assume they might not, and they might be looking for more, I don't know, bargain deals than just going all in.
So as Adam's looking for the bargain bin buy already, Mr. Panikkar, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I'm not upset at all about missing out on Paxton. Ben Nicholson-Smith said today, or there was a piece written on Paxton today that was said basically that he had some interest. The Blue Jays conveyed a little bit of interest, but there was ultimately no contract offer made. So just shouts to me that they didn't want to go down the path of potentially injuries again for James Paxton and whatnot, and they just didn't feel comfortable signing him. So I'm fine with that. If they didn't think it was worthy of even offering him a contract, I think that speaks volumes to where their heads were at in regards to him. Look, I'm really starting to think, guys, that Odorizzi and Walker aren't on their radar anymore, and I really think that's because they want to kind of line it up with some of the more recent moves in terms of one-year deals. There's a lot of guys whose contracts expire at the end of 2021. It's going to free up over $40 million in cash for them to reinvest that into the next offseason and maybe use some to extend some guys as well. So, yeah, I really do think that if Walker or Odorizzi were willing to take a one-year deal, then it might have been done by now. But it's not, and that's my guess as to where things sit right now. It seems like Walker might be getting 2 years from the Mets, at least. That's the latest. Ben Nicholson-Smith also tweeted that today, that they were in discussions. So, yeah, it's really looking like they're going to roll with what they have currently in-house. And there's a lot of depth, a lot of it unspectacular and unproven. But there are some high ceiling guys in there too. So I guess they're banking on a few bounce backs like Robbie Ray, maybe Roark evening it out a little bit, even though I don't really want to see that. And maybe a prospect or two breaking out.
You just made Jason like cringe. If you didn't know. And I just think it's funny that Jason brought that up, and that's literally the mantra that we basically have had on this show ever. On the whole Tanner Roark bun. So that being said, the Blue Jays are looking for reinforcements, hopefully with the Odorizzi or the Walker conversation. And Brendan, do you think any of these guys are still an option for the, you know, where that conversation was starting to steer, or you're on the boat that we missed it?
Yeah, I think they've missed it. They would have had it done by now, especially with Walker, who clearly has expressed interest in coming back, like we've talked about the last few weeks. So no, I think the boat has sailed. I think they're going to roll with what they have and hope some guys break out and stay healthy.
So Adam, you were preaching that same thing. Are you thinking we're full on out on the Walker Odorizzi ballpark here?
Yeah, you figure Corey Kluber costs $11 million, and then Paxton costs, what, $8.5 million? So you figure both Odorizzi and Walker are probably going to, maybe not in terms of AAV, but it's definitely not going to be a one-year deal for those two individuals. And if Walker wants 10-plus per year, I assume Odorizzi wants something like that, if not a little bit more. I can't see the Blue Jays doing it unless a significant trade happens, unless they get creative. I don't see it. And again, this is, I don't want to bring down the mood, but it might be just typical Blue Jays dumpster diving just to fill up some rotation pieces and wait into the trade deadline to sort of use their prospect capital after they have a pretty decent understanding of what they have in terms of talent in the system, more so now that we hopefully, knock on desk, we'll have a triple A season. They'll be able to evaluate it better and use those pieces to acquire one via trade. I think that's probably the best case scenario. And that means they're going to have to keep their head above water pretty much until July.
Yeah. As they keep their head up above water, I do think that the minor league season actually happening is going to help even those potential trades. Because right now, if you're talking about trading one of those assets, what has anybody seen outside your organization on these guys? Okay, that was literally 2019. We're talking about numbers here, guys. Those are a little old at this point. Jason, what do you think the Blue Jays are looking at here in the Odo Walker ballpark? You in the ballpark that we're going to definitely not be getting one of those guys, or is this a hope and a prayer at this point?
I think they're still in on them. I think they, you know, obviously they're not going to be the front runners for any of them. Out of the two, I would go for Taiwan Walker just because obviously familiarity. He really enjoyed working with Pete Walker. You said the Blue Jays had one of the best analytics departments, you know, working with Pete Walker. And at the same time, I think he has a lot more to offer. I know that there were people there saying that his six starts with the Blue Jays last year were lucky, and they were, you know, the FIP and the ex-FIP, the ex-ERA, everything like that, you know, was higher than what his ERA was. But at the same time, you have to remember that this guy was a former top prospect. He's coming off a major injury, and now he's had a full offseason, healthy to prepare for the season. And I do think that he has much more to offer. So I kind of think that those factors will kind of offset the luck that he had in 2020. So I still think he's a good pitcher. It just comes down to, you know, how much is he asking for? I think I read Andy Martinez's report. He's with a New York outlet. He said that, you know, Walker was looking somewhere in the 2-year, $20 million region, which I'm personally fine with. I think that, you know, it's a good investment because I think he has the upside of a number three starter, and at $10 million, you know, that's a good investment. And at worst, he's, you know, he's your number five starter. But at the same time, I also agree that I think I read somewhere that in 2015, the opening day starter was Drew Hutchinson. And then, you know, we made all those trades and, you know, had that amazing run. So
Daniel Norris was part of that, too, just to throw that out.
Yeah, exactly. So the question becomes, you know, can this rotation survive until the trade deadline, when the front office can make those additions? And, you know, it's a risk. I don't know if it's necessarily the risk that I want to take. But, you know, I would understand it if the acquisition cost of Walker or Durzi was too high. So that's kind of where I stand.
A good stance, I think, my friend. I think that is exactly about summing up all of our thoughts there. I think one tidbit that was touched on there a little bit, too, was that the metrics and all the Pete Walkerisms and all the other good things that the Blue Jays organization has to offer has not really come to fruition for Taiwan Walker yet in that six-game sample size, and then not pitching the playoffs. Could be a piece of it as well. So it's just how it is, apparently. My dog is chasing everything around right now. So on that note, guys, we did actually have some actual news this past week. David Phelps has rejoined this team after we officially have full-on won the Thomas Hatch acquiring. And then we have also, don't panic, we have Joe Panic. I think those are both great moves. You got Phelps had a little bit of an off 2020, just like so many people did. And you got Joe Panic, who sadly was our DH in the playoff game that we're going to get back in a minor league deal. So it's a no-lose situation, right? We get a couple guys back on some easy deals, and we can run with it. Jason, what do you think about adding those two guys back to the fold?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of hard not to like, you know, low-risk deals like that. I think with Phelps, you know, it looked like he had a bad season in 2020, but I think that, you know, his numbers were kind of wrecked by one or two outings. And outside of that, he was really good. And, you know, he brings veteran experience. He can pitch in, he has experience pitching in high leverage situations as well. So it's kind of like a low risk signing for the bullpen with a little bit of upside. And the acquisition cost was so low that, you know, it's kind of, like I said, hard to hate. And Panic, same thing, you know, minor league deal. He knows the team. He actually was pretty good for the Blue Jays in 2020. As long as he's not our, you know, our starter in the infield, I'm fine with that as minor league depth. So yeah, both low risk, minimum upside moves that front offices make before the start of spring training.
Well, that's how it is, fellas. But Mr. Corsair, you want to talk in about what, are you excited to see either of these guys back? I honestly thought it was cool that we get to bring David Phelps back because we only got teased of his talents a little bit.
So. I just like how we flipped Phelps for Hatch, and now, you know, Phelps is back. So it's like we got Hatch for nothing. But I don't really care about minor league signings. They're so low risk that it doesn't even, you know, register on the radar. It is cool. Maybe we'll see Panic and it'll be DH again because, you know, Montoya loves doing that shit. Whatever. We need bullpen depth. You can't really, again, I've said this often enough that I don't like spending a whole lot of money on bullpen depth unless it's a legitimate arm that's going to make a huge difference. Obviously Phelps isn't that. So maximum he can make is, I think, 2.5 So whatever, it's fine. And if he can, again, this is part of our theory that they're going to try to keep their head above water up until the trade deadline. And, you know, bullpen help is going to be really, really important in order for them to do that. Unless this Blue Jays team goes on an offensive tear and they're just going to score like 8 or 9 runs within the first 5 innings, which, you know, not that the balls aren't beefed up, maybe that's not a legit possibility. But
who could that screw more than us? You know, that's the thing that killed me when I read that. I'm like, oh man, we just finally started hitting.
I don't want to say who screw most on the team, but there has been some numbers. Though.
Would it be our new acquiree?
Watch your fucking tongue.
There has been some studies and whatnot on that. Anyways, I digress.
I'm not here for data. Okay.
We're here to drink beer and watch baseball. Come on.
Data. That's it. No. I think that they're so low risk signings that they don't even really register. I know a lot of people are probably complaining about the panic move because, you know, the role, even though he wasn't terrible last year by any means, he's just not a sexy name that you really want to go out and acquire. But again, familiarity is the thing. It's a minor league deal. I don't have an issue with it. And again, bullpen depth. Can never have enough, and if it works out, great. And if it doesn't, what are you really wasting? $1.75 million? Whatever.
Something like that. And in all reality, we're only wasting right now a 40-man roster spot on Phelps. I believe they had to drop somebody who was your favorite drop, I think, of the last decade, Mr. Corsair.
Wait a minute, are we talking Fisher?
Dave Fisher!
God. Yeah, but he was traded. We actually got something.
But we actually had to DFA him to get Phelps first. And then that gets him off the 40-man roster, and he turned into cash money.
My only fear is that he got traded for a player to be named later, right?
Yeah.
I fear that he's going to be the player to be named later.
Could you imagine?
It's happened. It's happened before that a person was traded for a player to be named later, and then he was traded back to the team as that player.
Just to put this out there, what if we got like the 2021 version of Jose Bautista back in that trade? Just saying. It happened once before. That's how we got Jose before. He was the player to be named later, wasn't he? Oh, no, we traded the player to be named later. That's what it was.
Yeah.
I take that back. So anyway, could be something. Either that, I'm happy with the cash.
So. Dude, I don't care if it's literally
balls,
a nobody.
Case of beer.
I do not care. Get him out of my life.
Brendan, you got 2 cents on the Phelps Fisherisms?
I was just going to build on what Jason said about David Phelps. It's a very true point that it was only a few outings that really rocked him. And in a 60-game season where relievers are only pitching, like, I don't know what the innings totals were for the top reliever, but it probably wasn't much above 40. Maybe 50 innings pitched, your ERA can look pretty inflated after 1 or 2 rocky outings. And let's be honest, those rocky outings came when he was with the Phillies. And the Phillies bullpen was probably the worst in baseball last year. I don't think they could have fixed anybody from that bullpen. But yeah, I have his Fangraphs page up now, and he had a 2.77 ERA and a 2.81 FIP with the Brewers, and a 0.3 F4, which in 12 games is a nice little number to put up as a bullpen arm. And then he lost it all and finished as a -0.1 because it was -0.4 with the Phillies. That's just how bad it was. But yeah, no, he's solid, man. And at this point, it's like, who would you rather? Would you rather Shun Yamaguchi at $3 million or David Phelps or whatever he's going to get? At least Phelps, for the most part, well, actually for all the parts, is the more proven commodity than Yamaguchi at this point. It sucks. I was excited for Yamaguchi last year because there were some moments where some of his splitters really shone through and he started to figure it out, but I just don't understand the role they were trying to use Yamaguchi in last year, because he would come in the 10th inning with a runner on base, and it's just like, man, this guy isn't used to pitching out of the stretch. What are we doing here? So yeah, no, and panic, yeah, it is what it is. He might not make the team. He might. It's just extra competition for guys like Espinal and other infielders.
Worst case scenario is another veteran to learn from spring training wise. And we saw how important even a guy like Caleb Joseph ended up being at the end of the day last season. So I'm all for it. It goes wins. Mr. Lee, would you like to add anything as, you know, Adam's, you know, running around celebrating the fact that Derek Fisher is not on this team anymore and all that kind of good stuff, or have anything you would like to add on Yamaguchi, was the other releasee in the last week?
Yeah, actually. Oh. Yeah, I mean, Brendan brought a great point with the Yamaguchi thing, you know, how Montoya was using Yamaguchi. And it kind of brings up a bigger question, is Montero the right man for this job? Like, his payment was crap season, and he's good for developing the young players. And I know this wasn't in our agenda, but I've had times, you know, where I see the George Springer signing, I see the Hyunjin Ryu signing, and you kind of wonder, it's like, oh, like now we're starting to compete for the real deal. Is Montoya the man on the right arms? Is he the right man to manage Game 7 of a World Series? And thus far, he has shown me that he is not that man. So I guess I kind of want to ask you guys, like, what do you think about Montoya? Like, for me, he's been very subpar. I haven't seen what he's done behind the scenes with the younger guys. I know that a lot of the players in the clubhouse respect him, but in terms of game management, he's quite poor, honestly. So I guess, what do you guys think?
I'm going to let Adam run with that because we already know his opinion on the show here. And I think Jason must have been listening to you, Adam, is all I'm thinking here is where this conversation came up.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think a lot of people put too much stock into management of a game, especially now. People like to point at the last playoff game or the playoff game, rather, not the last one, the playoff game with Shoemaker, I think was game one. And how he was pulled early, and people are blaming Montoya for that. I don't at all think that was a full-on Montoya decision. That came from the top down. He was probably just following orders and whatever the stat machine spat at him. But I do think that when it comes to Montoya, I consider him a bridge manager. I've said that multiple times here. I don't think he's the manager of the future. I don't even think he's the manager that they wanted. I think initially when going out and searching for that manager, I think they had someone younger on the mind, and it just didn't come into fruition. Not to say that he's, you know, terrible at his job or to say that he's got a bad baseball mind. I don't think that at all. I just don't think that he's the right guy for the job. But when it comes to game management, I don't really put much stock into managers in terms of development. I don't really put much stock into managers in terms of, you know, how to accentuate the talent of the individual. I think that's up to the individual, and I think that's up to how they approach their game. But in terms of how he manages the game, it can be iffy. Like, again, we can bring up the panic to DH. That was a little weird to me. His lineups are always fluid. It's never the same. But then again, we could say the same thing about the Rays. The Rays last year I think they only repeated the same lineup once, and they made it to the World Series. So who the fuck am I? to say that this is the bad approach? But all in all, I just don't know that he's the manager for the future. I don't hate him. I don't have a lot of confidence that he's going to be the guy that's going to ride out this young core for the future.
Yeah, I'm in the exact same camp, and I've agreed with you on that, Adam, for a while. I still think, as long as they keep Brian Schneider in the organization, that he's the next guy, because he's won with this core down in New Hampshire, and he's grown with them the entire time, whether it's being up in Buffalo or now in Toronto. I think that's who I've said even a year or two ago should be the future manager. I know other people on Blue Jays Twitter brought it up too. So, yeah, it's a good question, Jason. It's a good debate to have because they seem to really like him, but at the same time, like, I know he's probably a minion and gets handed a lineup card every day from the analytics department, and he has no say over the matter whatsoever. He may have a little bit, but the most part, it's like, hey, man, when we hired you, you are bought into the analytics like you said you would be, and we're going to be giving you the best constructed lineup by what the computers are saying. At least that's the way it seems to be. I mean, that's really the only logical explanation between the lineup being different every single day, is that they hand this to him and say, these are the best matchups and the best spots to hit guys in against this starter today. I truly think I'm with you, Adam, and with you too, Jason. I'm not sure if he's the guy to lead this team into the playoffs. If they make it this year and he does well, I think he may buy himself another year. But much beyond that, you might want to start thinking about, okay, we got to start capitalizing with this core right now.
It wouldn't surprise me if Baldelli was the guy that they really wanted he was young and relatable. And I think when you have a guy like that with this young core, like, imagine him. He wasn't the best of baseball players, Rhode Island native, but still, he wasn't the best of baseball players. But still, you have someone like him relating to a guy like Bo or to a guy like Cavan, I mean, that's cash money. And it's money well spent, but it depends on how well you're buying into the analytic department. And apparently Montoyo, we heard it on his press conference. He was saying, I like the mix of both. I like having that old school feel it out mentality and the analytics, but it seems like he's more gearing towards the analytics because, well, it's what he's getting paid for.
Can I just point out one thing? Does John Schneider have like the best job title of all time?
Yeah, John Schneider, not Brian Schneider.
Major league coach, just simple.
I don't know.
Just that.
What about Bo's dad? What is his title?
Masher.
Yeah, he's just there. No, he's
just there. I think he has some like advisor title.
Yeah, it's just a made up thing that they just here. You can have this because you'll kill me. Like
Michael Mike
the
Tyson
only East. Better title in all of sports that I've seen is Brad Childress back in the day, the former Vikings head coach. Mm-hmm. After he got fired from the Vikings, he went to work for the Kansas City Chiefs, and they showed him. I think it was on Sunday Night Football or Monday Night Football one time, and his title was coordinator of special projects.
Yeah,
what does that even mean?
Yeah,
it's a special forces football guy. Don't worry about it.
Yes, special projects. Yes. We have a very special role for you, Brad.
Let me get you on this, but I agree that we've discussed it on this show a lot that he's the bridge guy right now. Right, where do you go from here and there and all that kind of good stuff? It was amazing that we made the playoffs last year, and it was really only because of certain things falling into and a literal pandemic that led to it. A 500 level baseball team does not usually make the playoffs. I hate to say, as much as I enjoyed it, and it sucked for two games, but I digress. The fact that we were there, it just shows that this young core is that hungry and ready to compete. And the thing that we got out of the most of the last season is this team will grind out every freaking pitch. And I think that was the big thing to be seeing from this young core and this talent. Hence the reason they felt like being able to push these chips into the table. And the next part is, okay, is it purely analytics that we're going to keep running with? I want to see him get back to one. And this was my New Year's resolution, and seeing both of yours New Year's resolutions have come through. I feel like mine has to come to fruition just a little bit. And I said, ditch the money ball nonsense and let's get back to playing some fucking baseball. So that was my piece of it. Jason, did you want to add anything before we move to our real excitement, which is spring training?
No, I think you guys hit all the points that I wanted to talk about.
Perfect. I'm glad we got you covered, buddy. So, anyways, spring training officially kicks off tomorrow, boys, as pitchers and catchers report. There's a lot going on with this team, a lot of moving parts, things that still could be added and improved and all that kind of good stuff. And we also are hoping there's going to be some things that come to, you know, the top of the everything here this spring, and we get some good pieces that actually add to this team from either a trade, minor leagues, whatever it might be. What are you guys watching? First let's talk position battles. Let's talk pitching. If everything is right now where it is, who do you see rising to the top that maybe is taking somebody's spot, like Tanner Roark, who is clearly slated probably as a fifth or fourth starter in this rotation right now? And I think that is the biggest glaring hole for the Blue Jays position battles. And Jason, would you like to pick it up?
Just a name that I always like watching pitch, that I think, you know, would be a very serviceable fifth starter is Trent Thornton. You know, he kind of the weird delivery, but all his curveball is really good. And he added a cutter last year, and I really wanted to see it more in action before he got injured. And they kind of shut him down for the season. So I'm kind of excited to see what shape he's in, exactly, you know, how much of an opportunity that the Blue Jays are going to give him. And, you know, maybe, you know, they're seeing something in him or, you know, the other younger guys that's kind of convincing them to, you know, hold the money on Taiwan Walker, hold the money on Jake Odorizzi. Let's hold it for, you know, the trade deadline where we can, you know, acquire a contract or something like that. Because, you know, Is Taiwan Walker a huge upgrade over Trent Thornton? I wouldn't say huge upgrade. I would say an upgrade for sure. But I also think that Trent Thornton can easily be a low four, high three ERA guy that gives you 180 innings at the back end of a rotation. I'm just excited to see how he pitches in spring training. And he is kind of like my sleeper to watch out for in terms of the rotation battle.
Yep. Brendan, let's start with you now, I guess. Move it, sure. Change the rotation a little bit here.
Yeah, no, sure.
See, even I'm tinkering.
I think Trent Thornton is a forgotten guy because he went out injured and didn't pitch very much last year. So maybe that's just added reason for why they maybe may not feel an urgency to go out and sign an arm, is because they still have him and a bunch of others that can compete. The arm that, and I've said this before in previous podcasts, so sorry if I sound like a broken record, but they did pay the most this past deadline to get Ross Stripling. I know it's because he has some years of control left, but he's had some really, really good stints with the Dodgers in the rotation, and is a very good swing man. In my books, Ross Stripling is probably not going to come close to pulling what a Marco Estrada did in 2015 when Estrada came in from the bullpen, pitched well enough, came into the rotation for injuries, and then just took off to become the dominant Marco Estrada. But I could see something similar-ish where you get stability from Ross Stripling, whether it's six innings, maybe the occasional seven inning start, even though it seems to be a thing of the past for
Jays. Oh,
God, freaking out.
I don't want to say it, but you never know. Even if it's low fours, I think that's fine for a guy at the back end of the rotation, and it's better than what they got from anybody outside of Hunter and Ryu last year. So, Stripling's the guy for me. I think people should be paying attention to a little bit more. And I would honestly not be surprised if Roark gets off to a slow start. They either eat his money because it'll be cost less because they've had him once the season starts, or they flip-flop and Roark goes into the bullpen and Stripling comes out into the rotation.
There you go. Adam?
It's funny because Roark's the oldest guy in the rotation that has a chance to be in the rotation. You would think it'd be Ryu, but it's actually Roark. I think Stripling absolutely has a chance to get in there. I think you have a bunch of wild cards in here. I think Hatch can be a wild card to get into the rotation. I don't really think Roark's even going to make it out of spring training. I really don't.
I hope not.
You know, so if you're are we convinced? Obviously, Ryu and Pearson. First of all, are we 100% convinced that Pearson is going to start in the rotation and not in AAA?
Not 100%.
That's what I'm saying. So it might be just out of necessity that, but I can't see a scenario that Pearson gets beat out by Roark unless they're just being stubborn and they want to give the development to Pearson. So we'd say Ray would be in there, right? I would assume. Stripling. And you could do a lot worse than Hatch. Really, you could if we're going to have Pearson in there. I don't think Roark even gets in there. And I think Thornton, he's been so up and down that I just don't see him being, you know, stable in the rotation, you know, a solidified role. It might just be as a spot start here and there, or if they're going to run a bullpen day. Same thing with Anthony Kay, if they really wanted to. But I think that's what you're looking at. And again, that's not sexy, but if they can click, it might be fun. All you really need out of this team is six innings for a starting pitcher.
Especially when the bullpen looks as good as it's going to look.
Yeah. It's all you need.
So I wonder if this is a fun time to play a game. So
hold on. I have breaking news.
Uh-oh. Go for it.
Tim Tebow is retiring from baseball.
Oh, no! Oh,
come on, I was looking forward to seeing him in Syracuse this year.
I thought we were finally going to get talking. We've got to talk breaking Blue Jays news.
He got me all
excited. I gotta give credit to my source, Rich, fellow small boy.
You just wanted to make sure you officially buried all my chances of drafting him in fantasy football again.
Of course.
Just saying. So I'm looking at the 40-man chart, guys, right now, and I was just thinking, you know what? Let's just look at the pitchers that are starting pitchers, and you will tell me better than Roark or not better than Roark. I mean, let's see what happens here.
This will be an easy game.
I'm going to start with a guy that actually, quote-unquote, is destined for the bullpen but has been a starter for the Blue Jays in the past, Ryan Barucki.
Better, as a starter?
If Ryan Barucki better as a starter than Roark or not.
No.
Anybody?
I don't want Barucki in the starting rotation at all.
I'm the same.
I think he's better, but I would agree that he's been lethal out of the pen.
I agree.
Yes.
Wild card guy, Tyler Chatwood, better or worse than Roark?
Ooh.
Just based off what you're gonna get, but he was a great
starter
of the
last year. I'm gonna say no.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a match, even.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't matter.
I could see that.
Yeah, if they're fighting frustrating. For
spots, yeah, if they're fighting for spots, that's we're in a bad position.
I'm just going, I just thought it would be a fun game. I'm going through every guy that is starting pitching in our rotation right now. We already mentioned Thomas Hatch, probably better, right?
Better.
Okay. Yeah. Anthony Kay.
Better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oddly enough, apparently Alvis Luciano is still on our 40-man roster. I'm surprised that's still there.
Not yet.
Okay, not yet. Steven Matz.
Ooh.
Again, I think it's the same thing as Chatwood.
All right.
Yeah, I think I'd go there at this point, too. I mean, if you told me we were getting 2015 or 2016 Steven Matz, he could be the second best in this rotation very behind well Ryu, but there's no guarantee of that, so I'm going to say equal as well.
Merriweather.
He's not in the rotation.
He's going to try out, I thought they were saying.
Yeah, but... Yeah, that there's okay. Just way too much injury risk with that guy. Like, even in the bullpen, it's as risky as it is right now. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I'd rather Roark over Merriweather right now.
And we already said Trent Thornton. Would you think he's on par with Wagispack?
Roark?
Yeah.
Yes, they're very similar.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. Well, TJ Zoik.
I would give Zoik the starts.
I would just see what we got. Yeah,
might as well.
There was something about just watching the way his sinker plays. The way I see it, at least in American League East ballparks, you got a guy versus Roark who's more pop fly ridden versus a guy that's going to keep the ball on the ground. And I always would rather pick the guy that keeps the ball on the ground. Ground balls are more democratic, according to Bull Durham, right?
Yes.
So, anyway, I'm done. So that would have been a fun random game to play. So... As far as position battles go, the other one I think is the kind of the one that's going to rise to the front here, guys, is we more or less have our four outfielders. I'm going to just call that done. But what the hell is going on at third base? Who's going to play first? You guys want to give me that position battle in a summary here? Jason, you want to kick it off?
Do we have our four outfielders? Like, I know we have our four outfielders, but is Grichuk just going to be a bench person then?
DH?
That's just... Just thinking about that. Is he happy with that?
It's a very good point.
Right now, if you're going to... Well, let's just go to the outfield scene. You're going this direction. If I was going to go right now, at least the way I was constructing this whole thing, is I'd be playing roulette with the who's got the day off in the outfield to play DH, because in all reality, those are some good bats when it really comes down to it. The question is, with that next piece, is who plays third and who gets shifted around because of Semien being here. Does Roddy Tellez, I think, is a better hitter, potentially, and a left-handed bat than Randall Grichuk if he's going to be taking DH spots? And 100%. I think that's – I like the balance, so I don't know. What do you guys think? Who wants to just run with it?
Just the outfield? Or third pitch.
Let's go talk outfield first.
Okay, so I think Gurriel is cemented in left.
Yep.
Some guy is cemented in center.
Who is in action?
Yeah, we'll put that guy Springerfield in center field. And I just think because of the hot tear he was on last year and, you know, the money they gave him, I think Teoscar is going to be your at least starting off as your starting right fielder.
Yeah.
Just because of the money, it's an expensive fourth outfielder unless there's a move made.
Yeah.
You're going to have Grichuk as your fourth outfielder. And then you have Cavan, who can play everywhere. If they needed a fifth, if they needed to have, you know, if someone knock on desk, God forbid, gets hurt or needs a rest, Cavan can, you know, fill in nicely. So I think that's your outfield. At least the initial three, those are what you're banking on.
Yeah. Still all reeks of trade to me.
It's got it.
It's got it. Yeah.
Because look, I agree with Adam, and I think Jason, you might as well. That's where it has to be taken a step further. So let's just say you run with that, and Grichuk, who probably isn't going to be happy about his spot on the team right now, either you play Grichuk in right and Teoscar at DH, or Teoscar at DH and Grichuk at in right, or whatever the alignment is. And then it comes down to, okay, so who's playing first base that night? Is it Vlad? Is it Rowdy? Whoever's playing first base, let's say it's Rowdy, okay, is Vlad playing third or is he DHing? And then in that scenario, Vlad's playing third, where's Cavan? Because Semien was brought in to play second, and there's no room to play Cavan because DH is now locked up, right field is now locked up, left field. So it absolutely reeks trade, and I still think there might be one during spring training. Like, if Grichuk gets off to a hot start, or maybe Rowdy gets off to a hot start in spring, I still would not be surprised at a deal that will consummate in spring training once stuff starts getting underway. We've seen, remember, it was before opening day, was it 2013 or 2014? All those trades the Padres made when they got Craig Kimbrell and Justin Upton right before opening night. So stuff like that could happen. But they're in a good position no matter what way you look at it, no matter what alignment it is. The offense is going to be just deadly.
Yeah. I'm thinking about third base. I think having Vladdy there, I don't want anybody to walk into this thinking that it's his to lose. It has to be his to earn at this point. I don't think he's going to just walk in and automatically be given third base. He's got to be proven that he can do it. Don't love Cavan at third. I really don't. But in a pinch,
see, that's the thing
that
kills me about this whole
there.
Thing. Because to me, he's second base all day, and I don't even want to mess with it. But unless Semien is going to move to third, which in my opinion, he's got the better arm of the two, and he could probably learn third base because he's a shortstop. This guy was making rifle throws from short in the outfield last year for the Oakland A's. And I don't know if you guys have seen that ballpark in Oakland or not, but it ain't little.
No, I know, but it sets a bad precedent, I think, for Bo. I think that's his spot, period.
No, and I'm not saying moving Bo. I'm not touching. All right. I'm saying about moving Semi into third so it leaves Biggio at second. And then, like I said, you're going to have to just – I would be moving an outfielder and playing back and forth with Rowdy Tellez and Vlad at first and DH. That would be me. I just want that – you know, you guys remember what DHs used to be? Insane amount of pop. How does that not spell Rowdy Tellez and Vladdy in that spot and just let them play back and forth? So
that's let me toss something in the mix just to, you know, fuck up everyone's day even more. What if Vlad lights it up defensively at third in spring training? What do you do?
That's a nice question to have and worry about later.
You know, like, it's not impossible because of the work that he's put in.
I agree.
I love the arm there. I really do. Footwork is kind of questionable at this point. If he's got the weight down, then fine. I'm willing to give him the opportunity. But if he shows promise for third base and he's walking in opening day as your starting third baseman, I mean, you might be looking at Cavan off the bench.
As much as I don't want to say it with his on-base percentage, you could very well be right. He's unfortunately the odd man out in this situation.
Yeah.
So, but like I said, we've been saying a minute ago here, something reeks of trade and unfinished business with this roster as far as offense is concerned. I don't think they're going to trade somebody like Biggio or high-end prospect-wise to clean out any room for this when they only have Semien on a one-year deal. You're not going to trade your guy that is a lock for future second baseman when you got a guy that's only guaranteed to be there for one season.
Yeah, and you look, to add a little bit more confusion to the mix, not that this is solidified, this is obviously changing every day, but looking at the depth chart right now, as of today, right, and this is obviously not set in stone, this is spring training has to happen before they do anything. First of all, Alejandro Kirk is their number two catcher, ahead of Reese McGuire, right? That's as of today. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is at the top of the depth chart at first, over Rowdy.
And it makes you wonder what the heck. Well, we talked about it. If you're going to sell high on somebody, who else do you sell high on other than Rowdy Tellez?
Right.
A great season last year. Unfortunately, derailed by an injury.
Right. Yeah. Cavan, as of right now, is at the top of the depth chart for third.
Nope.
And starting right fielder as of right now is Randall Grichuk.
So they're playing Teo at DH?
No.
No, Teo's your fourth outfielder.
The top listed DH right now is Rowdy.
Is Rowdy, yeah.
I forget, but I think it was somebody at the Athletic was reporting that he is probably destined to be our cleanup hitter this year as Teoscar Hernandez.
Yeah, I can see that. This is tentative. This isn't set in stone.
No, I get it. Mm-hmm. No, we'll get to more tentative in a minute.
They are ordered the way you would expect them to, especially the rotation of the bullpen, because Yates is ordered first, then Romano, then Dolis, then Baruchy, Phelps, Chatwood, Cole, Merriweather, Murphy, Wegespack. So hey, it makes you think.
Yeah.
Either way, sounds like we're going to have a little bit of a Thunderdome thing going on here with positions and pitching rotation and whatnot, and see how the chips fall here at the end of spring. But out of those equations, is there anybody that you guys are excited to see maybe be that guy to take a job this spring?
Kirk?
All hail King Kirk.
Yeah. You know, I know they love Jansen, and I don't think we can bank on them having any sort of movement there. Although, yeah, like a lot of people like to create trades, I don't think they're going to move off of Jansen. Otherwise, it just seems pretty basic to me. And that's not a knock on anything. That's not me trying to put it down. It just seems pretty unelaborate, right? And what
but
we're
it's a
expecting.
Nice problem to have that we're arguing even the fact that we have potential in both of those guys.
Right.
Anybody?
Go for it, Jason.
Yeah.
I honestly am a huge Rowdy Tellez fan. I think that, you know, you could sell with him, but there's also the risk that he becomes, you know, an elite left-handed power hitter and, you know, a really, really good left-handed hitter. Because, you know, all of our hitters right now, you know, there's just no balance I find in the lineup right now. A lot of these guys are strikeout prone, you know, and then I would like to see a lefty to kind of break up Springer, Vladdy, Gurriel, Teoscar Hernandez, right? It's just all right. And as an opposing manager, that's easier to deal with than if you got, you know, have an elite left-handed bat and Rowdy Tellez in there. So if he can, you know, have a hot spring and kind of tie down that first base DH role, that's what I would like to see. And I think that's what would, you know, really elevate this Blue Jays lineup into the next level.
Okay. Yeah. Just going through the depth chart, it seems like other than the logjam that's everywhere, as we just went over, there isn't too many battles or anybody that's going to break out. The only battle that I see so clear as day is now that you bring back Joe Panik, it's between Panik and Espinal for who is the utility guy off of the bench. And honestly, unless Panik has himself another good spring, I would rather go with Espinal at this point. I think he showed a lot last year. I don't think he's going to be ever spectacular or ever very good, but he can be serviceable as that utility guy. And he seems to be a really good clubhouse fit. So, yeah, I mean, everything else seems to be pretty much in place, barring a trade or two.
Big piece in Santiago Espinal's favor. He's already on the 40-man roster.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's nothing extra that has to go, and not to mention – from what I've seen, I'm intrigued enough to actually hope that he has a very good spring, because in all reality, he's got some upside. But right now, I think as far as Blue Jays fans are concerned, I'm going to go flashback in here to, you know, the panel days to Manuel Lee. He kind of reminds me of that, and he was in our shortstop for the 1992 World Series. So I think that's at least where he can be. If he goes higher than that and exceeds that, it's fine by me. He's already got a great glove. Some of that power that he showed in the minor leagues comes through. Great. Perfect. Does anybody else have anybody else they're excited, period, for this spring? Or as far as what you're going to be looking forward to watching in Blue Jays baseball, period, for the spring training? Not so much battle stuff.
Springer.
Yeah, I was going to say. Home runs.
Springer diggers!
There's that new pitcher. There's that new pitcher that everyone was talking about. I forget his name. He escapes me. It was like a sudden sleeper that everyone started talking about, because he's not on the 40-man roster, but apparently he throws like a high 90s fastball, and he's an outside contender for a bullpen spot.
Really?
Is that the guy we acquired?
His name escapes me.
Is that the guy who acquired for the waiver wire from the Red Sox?
I don't think so.
Was it a guy on the Bison a year or two ago, Jason?
I don't think so, because I had never heard of him. So it could be the Red Sox guy, but
okay. Payamps or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
No, not him.
Or is it
him.
Nick Algiera? Algiera.
No.
I don't know who he is. I'm shocked. Somebody even escaped my minor league fund. Just saying.
Oh,
and that's what 2020 did to me.
Yosfer Zulueta. Apparently, he's
really
yeah. That's what I've been reading a lot of positive stuff on him. that he you know, he has really, really good stuff, and he has an outside chance for a bullpen role.
Gotcha. So yeah, could be a name to look out for. So is he in the dark horse candidate kind of ballpark play, Jason?
Just because, like, I want to see what all the hype is about, because I had never heard of him before.
Well, just suddenly... to say, apparently MLB.com has not either, because there is nothing. No minors, no nothing. It's just 6'1 on 90, age 23. That's all it says. Oh, and he throws right, just saying. So, but no, that's fun. Apparently he hasn't... he played for the DSL Blue Jays a few years ago. He's been hurt. So, non-roster invitee. There you go, boys. It's always fun to see one of those guys come up and just run away with it. It's currently listed as number 91. Just saying. Hopefully he gets a promotion. So, I'm just going to say this. I'm looking forward to seeing what Marcus Semien is going to bring to the table for this team. I really think he's got all the world and talent, and I really just would love to see another guy in this lineup that is potentially able to hit 25 home runs. Maybe it's just me. I'm looking forward to typical Blue Jays baseball where it's let's just rack up a bunch of home runs and hope we beat the living hell out of somebody. Alrighty. So moving right along, fellas. Let's Adam, do you have your Pagoda test or stuff in front of you that you texted all of us earlier for the projections?
No, but I can pull that up.
Okay, if you would be so kind, because I don't have it in front of me, and there's too much going on my broadcast stuff right now.
Yeah, I got it.
So, but in all reality, what it comes down to is the Blue Jays are projected to be the third place in the American League East, and what it really sounds like is they're just not giving the Blue Jays a ton of love. A lot of the reasons are probably because of our pitching rotation and the lack thereof of it, but the fact that this is probably one of the best offenses in all of Major League Baseball with what the Blue Jays management has assembled for this season. And this was already correct me if I'm wrong, guys, weren't we number 7 in all of baseball last year offensively, or at least in runs scored, something like that, rings a bell.
Mm-hmm.
So it's already a top 10 offense in baseball. You added George Springer and Marcus Semien. We're going to rank. It's simple as that. So Adam, if you have those numbers in front of you, I would love to talk about it and what the projections are saying for the Blue Jays post spring training for this season.
Sure. I do think you're right about the projections being influenced by the fact that the Blue Jays have a very, I'd say, subpar at best starting rotation heading into the season. But right now they have the Yankees finishing with a projected 97 wins. I'm taking the under on that. I don't think they're going to win 97 games.
So you're telling me that Aaron Judge and Stanton might get hurt.
Yeah, more than likely. They have the Rays finishing with 86 wins. I'm not even going to comment on that because it's bad voodoo to think the Rays are going to be worse or better than what is projected. They're
mantra.
An enigma.
Don't if they're going to the be Rays.
Yeah, they're an enigma in and of themselves. But not far off, they have the Blue Jays finishing third with 85 wins. I think they're due for a little bit more than that. I'd say maybe 88. I definitely want to go as far as 90 unless they do beefing up that rotation, solidify it a little bit better, make it more robust. But I think between 85 and 88 is pretty fair. If that's the case, you know, maybe that is slightly better than the Rays, but it should put them in the wild card conversation. Red Sox with 80 wins, I'm going under with that. And Orioles with 66, I'm going under with that as well. So, you know, for the Blue Jays, it's a fair assessment, 85 wins. Again, I'd slightly go over, no more than 88 as of right now, just because of the run production and where they're going to be playing. If it's in Dunedin, I don't know how hitter friendly they've made that ballpark since the upgrades. But if they're going to go to Buffalo, that gives them more of an advantage hitting in a AAA park.
I believe the dimensions of the Dunedin field, even before the renovations, were the exact for the Rogers Center.
Oh, so it's Major League ready. Okay. Well, then, still, that's a good barometer then.
Still nice
the talent that we have.
Right?
Yeah. I don't think this is outrageous. I don't think this is not really giving them too much credit. I think this all lies into the fact that they don't really have a rotation to really speak of. And if they do, it's going to come as a surprise to most people, let's be honest. So for me, between 85 and 88, I think that's fair.
Jason, where are you putting the Blue Jays record-wise before we play over-under?
I would definitely agree with Adam. I think that for the Blue Jays to make the playoffs, you definitely have to be around the 88 rather than the 85. But it, yeah, like Adam said, it all comes down to how much pitching that the Blue Jays add, whether it's before the season starts or whether it's at the trade deadline. For me right now, is this year the year to go all in? And the answer would be no. I think that there's just too many uncertainties. A lot of guys still have so much experience to gain, so much to develop. So this year I'd just be happy with the playoff berth and, you know, contending. You know, next year is when you go all in, and next year's hopefully when you get those big pitchers, and that's when we see the projection start to go 90 plus wins. But for right now, yeah, I would be happy with anywhere around the 85, 88, and hopefully towards that higher number.
To your point on the contention window, we also get a lot more minor league reinforcements as soon as next season too.
Exactly.
Yeah. Brendan? No, absolutely. I'm probably in that ballpark too. I don't think how anybody can't be. Anything less than 85 or 84 wins is a disappointment with how good the offense is projected to be. But even if you had a really good scoring offense, like let's just say they're top five and you only win 85 or 86 games, I think you can still consider that a disappointment. And that's clear reflection of the lack of starting pitching that they're going into the season with. I don't think they're done. I think Jason's right. You might get something before the end of spring training, or you might get something during the trade deadline for reinforcements. Maybe we can have another David Price type acquisition. And I don't think anybody's going to come and pitch as well as David Price did, because that was unworldly, like just how dominant he was before the playoffs started. But
or it could just be David Price.
Or yeah, it could be David Price. I mean, I wouldn't be upset about that, especially because the Red Sox are paying some of his money. I think at the highest end right now, if you go into the season without making any other moves to the rotation, I would expect them to come in at around 86, 87. Even an addition of Taiwan Walker, who could give you a few extra wins, could push you upwards of like 87, 88, maybe even pushing 89, but still. There still is clear need there, and I'm not surprised where Pecota had them just because of the lack of starting pitching.
There you go. So let's play over under. Play the game show music. What was the number you had for the Yankees? 90?
They, me or them?
No, Pecota.
97. I'm going under.
You went under. Jason, what do you think? Over or under on the Yankees?
100% under.
A definitive 100%, not just normal, just hey, done, not gonna happen.
Yeah,
Brendan,
I agree. Can we acknowledge too that the Yankees rotation on paper is banking on a lot of the same stuff the Blue Jays are? Behind Ryu and Gerrit Cole, you're banking on Corey Kluber, who may or may not stay healthy. The Rangers had serious concerns about whether his arm was going to stay attached, which is why they let him go. I know they were also trying to save money, but still. And yeah, a lot of guys coming back from injuries. They lost Tanaka, they lost Jay Happ, and other guys. So
they're hoping Teon can jump in and be what he was with the Pirates, but in all reality, he's still.
That's an if, too. That's a big if. So there's three guys out of five, and Davey Garcia obviously was pretty good last year. You got to hope that he continues his development. Yankees behind Cole, just like the Blue Jays with Ryu, have question marks, and they're very similar type question marks to the Blue Jays. So yeah, I'd be under as well. I don't think they'll drop below 90, but maybe around 94, 95 wins.
Let's flip that around to the offense side here, though. How certain are you with their offense outside of, you know, Torres being one of the best players in baseball as a young talent? Are you expecting Gary Sanchez to be good? The two other guys to be around so that you have, like, you know, three main bats in your lineup in Stanton and Judge. And is Gio Urshela really this good? Just saying. What do you guys
even
think?
LeMayu could take a step back as well.
Yeah, DJ could for sure take a step, especially with the balls not being as juiced.
That's a lot of home runs.
Yep.
So, yeah, the offense. And another guy that you didn't mention that they're banking a lot is Luke Voit, too. I mean, Luke Voit just kind of came out of nowhere last year after he slimmed down. Hopefully it has the same effect as Vlad with slimming down. But yeah, no, and the injury concerns for sure. The Yankees offense just looks so different when even just one of Judge or Stanton isn't in the lineup, because you could pitch around the other guy and get to Voit or get to whoever else. So they have question marks. I have no doubt that they're going to win 90 games, but at the same time, Blue Jays the last few years have played the Yankees really tough, and it'll be only be tougher for the Yankees when they play Toronto now. So maybe we shouldn't be as scared as the Yankees as the projections are saying.
Adam, anything to add to last before I move to the next candidate?
Nah, I think their offense is quite good, and I think they're pretty scary, all things considered. I don't think we should take that lightly at all, and I do think they it would not surprise me if they eclipse 90. I just think 97 is a little high. Like anything approaching 100, I'll put them at the 95 mark. And I know that's just a two game difference, whatever. Yeah. But I do think they're capable. You know, assuming health, right, and you can't really bank on that too much in baseball, especially with, you know, the injury history of the Judge and why is his name escaping me? Stan.
Giancarlo.
I think they'll be all right. I think they'll be well ahead in first.
Yeah. So let's move on to the next piece. You had the Rays at how many wins for Pagoda?
They have 86.
I'm going to call that no spot problem. On. I'm not even going to say problem. Over or under. I'm thinking that's like right there. And this is even saying after they lost all the pitching that they had, they moved around some of their offensive pieces. Brendan, where do you have the Rays? Is there, does that sound about right to you?
I'd go a little over again, and that's just all to live up to my New Year's resolution of never selling the Rays short like I do year in and year out. Look, I know they've lost some starters, but they have more coming, and Wander Franco's going to get here at some point this year, and he will be a beast. He's projected to be better than Vlad was. So yeah, I think they might come in at around 88-89, kind of like what we just said with the Jays. I would go over on that.
And they always seem to find the Randy Arozarena, just saying.
They always do it.
Jason, over or under on the Rays on it at 87?
Definitely over. I still, honestly, I think that the Rays are still the team to beat in the AL East. Because, you know, they did trade Blake Snell, but the pitcher they got, Luis Patino, he's supposed to be one of the top, if not the top pitching prospect in all of baseball. And, you know, I definitely don't want to sell the Rays short. They always seem to find the hidden gems. They seem to work the opener, whatever bullpen magic that they find. They always have some weird three-quarters arm throwing 100 miles per hour coming out of the bullpen. So, in my opinion, a team that's gone to the World Series last year, they're definitely still, in my opinion, the favorite for the AL East. And I, as a Blue Jays fan, I'm definitely more scared of the Rays than the Yankees. That's just for me personally, though.
Me too.
That's not just because of the Trop effect, is it?
That's definitely plays a factor.
Piece
for
of
the
sure.
map.
Got it. So I wouldn't be shocked on that whole thing, too, because from the glaring eye things we were just talking about, that the Rays have always managed to find a way, and they are the team to beat. They were the, you know, American League champions, just saying. So,
went to the World Series, yeah.
Blue Jays, yeah. Like I said, pending some wild cards, we're at what we talked about a minute ago. The Red Sox, I'm going to even bury them under what you had. What was the number?
80. I said under as well, yeah.
I don't see how they're a 500 team. Is anybody else on that ballpark, or what are we going here if we go around? Under with me and Adam.
I would say under as well.
Brendan?
Yeah, probably under. At the same time, maybe they come close to that projection of 80. It depends. I mean, it depends how Sale comes back. I'm just trying to pull up their depth chart right now so I could go through and just look at their pitching. They have a lot of wild cards who could bounce back and provide some stability to their rotation, like Eduardo Rodriguez. Garrett Richards is a terrible signing. Nick Pivetta, they made a trade for. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they'll be very good, but at the same time, under, but it would not shock me if they come close to 80.
There you go. Jason, did you say under too?
Under. It depends on how Sale looks and how, if he has an innings limit or anything like that. Because if he's back to Sale of the old, then you still have one of the best pitchers in baseball who could give you anywhere from 15 to 20 wins. But yeah, their rotation is surprisingly deep, like Brendan just said. For me, though, they're not too much to worry about just because their farm system, they don't have anyone to really promote that can give you a sudden impact, right? It looks pretty depleted to me as of when I checked on it last. So,
Which is the exact reason Andrew Benintendi has now found a new address.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah, under for me.
There you go. And are we... I'm going to say it. I'm going to be this guy. I'm going to say over that the Orioles are not going to finish in fifth place.
Oh, they. I think they will.
There was something about that little streak that gives that's going to give me the I'm gonna be that guy. I'm gonna say over, but it. What was their number?
66. I'm still going under.
That's what losing a third. That's losing 2/3 of your games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Probably. There's nothing that screams that they're going to do more than that. But just that little streak gave me confidence in their minor league system last year.
There are pieces coming for the Orioles. I will say that. Like, just looking at their depth chart right now, John Means is going to break out. And I think if you're playing fantasy, you might want to think about grabbing John Means because he's legit. And he's going to be their unquestioned ace. But behind Means, there's nobody. King Felix, remember? He went to the Orioles. He's
best shape of his life candidate.
but no, they have some decent arms in their bullpen too. Hunter Harvey's decent, but they're off.
You gotta score runs though, dude.
That's the catch.
That's the thing.
Dwight Smith Jr. is still in that offense.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at it, the only bats that scare me right now are Santander because he had magic over the Jays last year. But unless Ryan Mountcastle takes a huge step forward, like he showed he might be able to, yeah, there's not a whole lot else there.
Is Trey Mancini actually healthy?
I think so. I haven't heard anything different.
I haven't either, but obviously he had a little bit of an issue. So,
from what I've heard, he's out for.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Adley Rutschman, their top catching prospect. He's supposed to be. He's been compared to Joe Mauer when he was in his prime.
Oh, Rutschman.
So. Yeah.
Right.
So if he, I don't think he comes up this year though, just because maybe for, September, but for the future, he's definitely one to worry about if you're a Jays fan.
Yeah, there are some pieces coming for the Orioles, and you saw a few of that last year, but yeah, they're still under for sure.
Yeah, this year is not. Craig, you really have them finishing ahead of the Sox?
I have a weird feeling. I do.
No.
I'm going my gut, unlike Ooh, Charlie Montoyo bold, right now. This big fat beer baby thing down here. I'm betting on that. There's something that says it.
So. I don't know. I just can't. I can see the Red Sox putting up some runs here and there. I can't see the like if the Orioles have a game in which they eclipse five runs, I'm going to be impressed.
Can I just point out a terrible, terrible idea here? For me to be right, you said they were projected for 63 wins?
66.
66. They only have to get 67 wins for me to be right.
No, but they have to finish ahead of the Red Sox.
Oh, okay. Because
you said you don't see them finishing fifth.
It's going to be a close race for the bottom of the AL East, I think. Just like how I think the other three teams that we've been talking about with the AL East is going to beat the living shit out of each other.
All right. Hold on. Let's make a friendly bet, a friendly podcast bet.
I'll give up my hosting week if.
Yeah. Do you see the Red Sox winning less than 70 games?
No.
I don't either.
You have to remember that Alex Cora is coming back, and despite all his roles in that Houston Astros controversy, he's still one heck of
Where's
a manager,
yeah.
And he's gonna have a huge effect for them.
Yeah, I can't see them winning less than 70, and I can't see the Orioles winning 70 plus. No. I just can't.
Okay, I was only being a dick because I think they could have made the one extra win, which would have put them with the Red Sox. But fine, all right, have it your way. What's that?
Who would you guys rather be a fan of right now when you look at active rosters? Would you rather be Orioles, Tigers, Royals, or Pirates? Probably because the consensus four worst teams in the MLB right now.
Tigers for me. They have a bunch of good pieces.
I'm in the boat with the Tigers too.
I think I am. I think I'm there too. The Royals maybe, but
I was
gonna
say Royals. Yeah.
Tigers are up there.
The Tigers have because they have Torkelson, who was like the number one pick. Casey Mize, Matt Manning for the rotation. Like, their pieces are actually surprisingly really, really good. And if they have another couple of good drafts.
I like Turnbull, too. I know this isn't a Tigers podcast, but I asked the question. I figure I might as well add a few names there.
He's always in the sleeper list for fantasy leagues.
Yeah. I had him a year or two ago, and it was okay until he started. I think he got hurt, or they just went on a terrible losing streak. So I'm like,
Plus, in the piece of that, too, in my opinion, the Tigers have had a better chance to gather that young talent with those other teams that we have been talking about. The Orioles just completely shot the shit out of their rebuild and, you know, blew up all their money on Crash Davis. So it was hard for them to, and they haven't drafted well, where the Tigers in the last 3-4 seasons have found guys like we were just laying out there, and that's just their first round picks. They have a few guys in their minor league system that have been, from what I've seen from a couple visits that I've had where they've been playing other teams for the Tigers system. They have some talent in that minor league system, and it's going to be fun, I think, in the next few years for Tigers fans. But anyway, so before we go off the air, because we're starting to run long, prediction for spring training, I want to just get one out of you guys each. Who runs away with the show this spring for each one of you, and who is your prediction for that kind of like outbreak guy, or who's just going to be the talk of spring training camp? Jason, who do you think?
I honestly think it's one of the prospects that have been called up. You know, I saw that Jordan Groshans was up, Miguel Geraldo. I think Orelvis Martinez also got an invite. Yep. And some of those guys have been really, really highly regarded by the organization. Another name is Gabriel Moreno. He's apparently another huge catching prospect, and the Jays seem to have a ton of those. So, you know, what if one of those guys has a huge spring and another team comes calling for them? You know, maybe that could be an impetus for a huge trade. And I think that, you know, obviously Springer is going to get a lot of noise just because he was the huge offseason acquisition. Same thing for Marcus Semien. But don't be surprised if, you know, one of these prospects, these top prospects, steal the show from Springer as well.
Adam, you want to go next?
I'm gonna pick best shape of his life candidate, Kirk. I think he's gonna surprise. They're putting a lot of emphasis on him, and you know that's been clear. And they value him highly to the point where, if you want to believe the reports and the rumors that a lot of people have been chasing after him in terms of other teams for a trade, and the Blue Jays are just steadfast saying no. I think Kirk can be. I don't think he's gonna have a monumental role this year. I think they're going to give Jansen every opportunity to fail. And you know, if come the middle of the season, maybe that July, August mark, that he's not really performing well and Kirk is, you know, showing promise, they might flip roles. But by no means do I think that Kirk is going to run away from the jump with the job. But I do think in spring training, you're going to see some things from him that's going to make your head turn. Otherwise, you look at the team, it's pretty straightforward. As we already said, you expect a high level performance from a lot of the players on this team. Not that I don't expect it from Kirk. I just think he's going to open a lot of eyes and earn it. So I like stories of under the radar, even though he's not really under the radar. I like the stories of best shape of your life, you know, getting into that
yeah,
and just breaking through. So
why aren't you picking Vladdy then, Mr. Best Shape of Your Life?
I mean, the hype is there, right?
The hype and is there.
We've been let down a little bit by Vladdy, and I'm not saying that he's a bust. By no means am I trying to imply that, but you know, the dude had a fucking MLB Network special for his debut, and it what are we doing? Like,
it made me leave the country to go see Brendan. Yes.
You know, like, I would love to see him turn it around. I really would, and hopefully he will. And this season is a prime opportunity for him to do so. But I just like the new stories. So let's see what Kirk can do.
All right.
I'm going to go with Jason on the prospect side of things, because let's look back a few spring trainings ago. 2018, who was the talk of town? It was Vlad. 2019, it was Bo. Last year, it was Pearson before MLB shut down. This year, it's probably going to be Jordan Groshans and be like, why isn't this guy going to get a job? Oh, because we have a logjam at the major league level and he just needs some more seasoning. And that was the rationale that we got for Pearson. That's the rationale we got for Vlad. And it's the rationale we got for Bo in terms of why they wouldn't make the team coming out of those respective spring training. So if on the offensive side of things, definitely Groshans. On the pitching side of things, it could be anybody, man. Like, it could be Semien Woodruff just blowing the doors off of an outing and everybody be like, bring him to the rotation. Kind of like it was with Pearson this last year, or it could be Adam Klofenstein. I'm not sure if he has an invite or not. Yes. Or it could be a guy we saw last year. It could be Merriweather being like, damn, or Thomas Hatch. There's a lot of options on the pitching side of things for somebody who could just completely surprise. But I think my top choice is Groshans for being the talk of spring training.
I'm going to go prospect as well. Austin Martin.
Oh,
that's a fair
just saying.
Sure.
If anybody had the potential to skip a level or all the minor leagues again, like John Olerud did, you're looking at the collective minor league stuff. Unless you're literally on a team like we were talking about, those bottom feeding teams where you can jump right from the minors to the prospect to Major League Baseball. If you were looking at the roster right now, Austin Martin screams that guy. College superstar, right? Has many positions he could play in. some trades might happen. Who knows? I'm just saying, weird shit can happen. If you were going to ask me who could be a guy that could make a really, really big standout and have that same conversation we were just talking about with Vladdy, Bo, and Pearson, I think Austin Martin could spell that as well. So anybody have anything else they would like to interject with before I give Jason Lee here his moment to discuss his wonderful findings and what he where he can be found on the internet and for self-promote? Anything?
I guess I do have something to add. I think that, you know, when we're now that we're on the topic of, you know, prospects lighting it up in spring training, I think as fans or as journalists, we do have to sort of believe what the front office is saying. I know that with Vladdy, I know that with Pearson, a lot of fans were upset because they didn't call them up early enough. With, you know, obviously there is contract issues. There is, you know, that manipulation of service time. But at the end of the day, you know, we saw Vladdy get called up and he struggled. We saw Pearson get called up and, you know, he also kind of struggled as well. So when the front office says a player or a prospect is not ready, I think for me, I think it's important for us to, you know, believe them because they are the ones who are getting the scouting reports every day. They're the ones who have been talking to the coaches. And that's kind of one thing that frustrates me. And I get that you want to see your team's top prospect in the big leagues as soon as possible, but you have to think about the future, right? What's best for this player? What's best for this team? You know, and in the case of both Vladdy and Nate Pearson, I think that maybe they were rushed because the fans were pushing. But I hope that doesn't happen with the likes of Austin Martin, Jordan Groshen, Simeon Woods Richardson, et cetera, et cetera.
There you go. Anybody else?
Wise words. I agree.
Well played, sir. All right. Well, Jason, if you want to continue to, you know, preach here for a second, go right ahead. Tell us where, tell Blue Jay Nation where they can find you and the, so far the 150 listeners that we had live with us tonight, where they can find you and your work. And obviously you're more than welcome to come back and join us at any time you feel like.
Yeah, so I'm still with Jays Journal right now. I write the articles for Jays Journal. But right now, actually, I've kind of been focused more on the Korean sports side of the industry. And I've actually partnered with a Canadian company to develop a fantasy football game for Korea's domestic league. So that's where all my energy has been poured into.
That's awesome.
But I'm still avidly following Blue Jays news. I still... I created that little fun little tier system to make sure that the reporters were, you know, not the that fans knew which reporters are credible, which were prone to make some mistakes from time to time. And yeah, I'm most active on Twitter and write the occasional Blue Jays article from for Jays Journal.
There you go. At Jays Hub, right?
Jason's underscore Jays Hub.
That's what it was. I couldn't remember off the top of my head. Sorry. Thank you for correcting me.
So, anytime.
Blue Jays fans, it's been another wonderful evening of Jaybird watching here. We're glad you all joined us. Make sure you hit up that experience stuff on the Patreon account. There is more stuff coming, and that's any of our social media at BirdWatchingGC. And also catch us wherever you get your podcasting pleasures from.
Stadium Scene.
Stadium Scene, shout out as well. Thank you, Brendan. And as far as everything else goes, Jason, it is tradition to hear to, you know, since the Caleb Joseph. To end with two claps and a Ric Flair. Ready to join us and shout, let's go, Blue Jays?
I hope, yeah.
All right, let's go, boys. Woo! Let's go, Blue Jays. Let's go, Blue Jays. Spring training. Go, Blue Jays. Woo!
Yeah.